This is The Health Show, a presentation of National Productions.
What is it about Americans that makes solving the problem of drugs and addiction so difficult? Addiction to drugs impacts almost every other problem facing the nation, from education to crime to poverty to health care. What are the most effective ways to defeat addiction, and how has the war on drugs made this problem worse? These are the questions being tackled by award-winning journalist and author David Sheff.
On today's Health Show, we feature an in-depth conversation on the topic of addiction in America with David Sheff, and talk about some of the possible answers to the problem in his new book called Clean, Overcoming Addiction and Ending America's Greatest Tragedy. I'm Dr. Nina Sachs.
I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Health Show. If the goal is putting huge numbers of people in prison, then the war on drugs in America is a resounding success. But if the goal is fighting and ending addiction in the country, then the billions of dollars invested in this fight have accomplished next to nothing.
In his new book, Clean, Overcoming Addiction and Ending America's Greatest Tragedy, David Sheff shows that addiction is a preventable, treatable disease, not a moral failing. Sheff's ongoing research and reporting on the science of addiction earned him a place on Time magazine's list of the world's most influential people. In his 2008 book, Beautiful Boy, Sheff chronicled his own son's descent into addiction. The Health Show's Joe Donahue recently spoke with David Sheff and asked how and why he continued his research into addiction.
Well, it really was all from that initial experience. I mean, my son, I was like so many of other parents and people who listen to you every day. I mean, we just think this could never happen to us. We have this image of what a drug addict looks like, and it sure doesn't look like our child, and it certainly didn't look like my son, Nick. But as a teenager, he became addicted. First, it was pot and alcohol, like so many kids, and then eventually he was using crystal methamphetamine and heroin and shooting it up, and he was in the emergency room over and over again. And over about 10 years, it was this horror that we lived in my family. And it was both watching this child, my lovely son, just self-destruct and turn on us, break into our home, get arrested. I mean, all kinds of stuff that was just unfathomable. But also I was thrown into this treatment system that really doesn't even exist. I mean, it's not a system. It was a nightmare trying to figure out how to save him. So finally, Nick was doing better. And I realized, that there's something wrong out there. And I went off as a journalist. And I spent basically the last, 5 or 6 years since then trying to figure out how we've gotten in this mess. Why are we so inept when it comes to preventing drug problems and treating addiction?
In the subtitle, you say that this is America's greatest tragedy. And after reading this book, it's hard not to agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, people have said to me, okay, we know that addiction is a big deal, but America's greatest tragedy. And the reason it is because it affects every other problem you can name. I mean, obviously it affects, addicts. There are 20 million in this country and 100 million of their families. It devastates. But, most crime in America is related to drugs. We have a healthcare crisis and our emergency rooms are filled. And some emergency rooms, 80% of the people who come in are there because of drug problems and addiction or accidents related to drugs, et cetera. Companies are losing about $220 billion a year because of drugs and untreated addiction. So this is the one health problem that affects everything else that we can name. And if we could fix it, if we could turn these numbers around, we don't only save lives and we don't only alleviate suffering, but we start to deal with our economic problems, our healthcare crisis. I mean, it is huge, and people don't get it and they don't talk about it.
When you talk about people not getting it, I think that there seems to be little compassion when it comes to the issue of addiction. And many people will just set it aside and say, well, it's a shame that they chose that and went that route and they should just stop, which obviously is much more complex. And it has to be, at least in my opinion, and you certainly pointed this in the book, it must be treated as an illness. And do you think it starts from a mental need to deal with with anxiety, to deal with stress, to try to replace and to calm something that is burning inside.
I do, and that's a really good way to put it. You know, we focus all the time on drugs as the problem, and you know, don't do drugs. But if you have somebody, especially kids, because they're the most likely ones to, you know, start using, if you have a kid out there who's suffering from anything, you know, from just an intense anxiety, you know, about social stuff or about whatever it's going on in their life, or certainly if they have something like mental illness, like depression or bipolar disorder, or they're suffering, you know, with a family that is in crisis in some way, some a loss of a family, abuse, I mean, any of those kinds of things, it seems to make a lot of sense to me anyway that, you know, that people turn to drugs because drugs push aside problems and make us feel better temporarily. And then there's this other component. There's a big piece of what leads to addiction that has to do with genetics. And so if there's an addiction or alcoholism in a person's family, they're much more at risk. So when you look at all these things, you start to understand that, no, this is not about a choice. This is about, yeah, I mean, I guess ultimately, yeah, it's a choice whether somebody picks up the joint or the drink or whatever it is when they're at a party. But most people do that. I mean, most people at some point, you know, by the time they're 18, you know, 80% of people try something. But most of them go forward and they drink or use in moderation, and some stop completely. But some of them become addicted, and that part of it is not a choice. No one chooses to become addicted. And if addicts could stop, they would, because it's no fun being addicted. I mean, that their lives are hell. They unravel. They destroy their relationships. They destroy their careers, their prospects. You know, many of them destroy everything in their lives, and of course, many of them die.
As we mentioned, this book has been in the works for 5 years, and I can't even imagine, in reading it, I was sort of overcome by the facets to the problem. So at what point did it overwhelm you? Because I don't see how it couldn't have.
Well, to tell you the truth, it overwhelmed me the whole time as it overwhelms me now, because it's such a big problem and it's so complicated. I've spent, as you said, all these years trying to figure it out. And I know, I mean, I did learn a lot, and I learned that we know a lot more than most people even understand. In other words, you know, we know a lot about prevention. We know a lot about treatment. What we know is not being put into practice. It's not in the hands of people who need it. But still, everything we know is so complicated. And, you know, we make one assumption, or there's one sort of revelation that I would come to, and then I would realize that it's not, you know, there's never anything black or white here. People ask me, you know, questions. Somebody last night, I was with some people, and somebody was trying to figure out, you know, is it good or bad if you're a parent who has had experience with drugs when you're raising a kid? You know, do you tell them about your own drug use? Well, I've read research that says that it absolutely is useful if kids hear from their parents in an appropriate way about that. But then there was just a new study that came out and says that it is harmful, you know, which is right. And I think the answer is probably it comes down to an individual circumstance in a family, the relationship between a parent and child, a parent's ability to communicate in a way that's effective. But it's, again, we want a black or white answer. Should I do it or should I not do it? And there isn't one yet. Maybe there will be someday, but not right now.
So given the experience that you went through with your son, and given the experience of writing this book and learning all of this information, putting it back in your lap and saying, okay, is there something that you could have done to prevent this problem with your son? What do you feel the answer is to that?
If I could go back and do it over again, knowing what I know now, I guess there would have been two related things that I would have done differently. The first thing is that when we see, you know, anybody we love, especially, well, anybody we love, spinning out of control and doing things that just make no sense at all. You know, Nick was stealing from us. I had to change the locks in our house because he was breaking in. He even stole from his little brother, who he adored and who worshipped him. So when this happened, you know, I just was thinking, God, what's wrong with this kid? He is really, really messed up. And I would get so angry. I would just be horrified. If it was happening now, I still would be horrified. But I think the difference is, because I understand now that, you know, that addiction is not a choice, it's an illness, I think I would have been able to look at him with more compassion, to understand that these were not choices and he really needed help earlier than I got it for him. I should have got him into treatment right away, because the longer you wait, the harder it is to treat somebody. And then the second thing I wish I knew is one of the big focuses of the book and that I've learned is that, you know, we keep talking about drugs as the problem, you know, stop using drugs, don't use drugs, you know, drugs are bad. But really what we need to do is to understand why people use drugs. So in my son's case, I mean, now looking back, I realize that Nick had On the outside, he was this great kid. He was doing really well. He was a good student, an athlete, and all that kind of stuff. But inside, he really had this psychic turmoil going on, and he was suffering from depression and bipolar disorder, plus this social anxiety that he just couldn't. I guess I would have looked closer to realize. One doctor said to me, if you think something's wrong, something's wrong. Looking back, I realized that I did know something was wrong, so I would have gotten him into help, into some kind of treatment earlier. And, you know, would that have stopped him from almost dying from drug abuse? I mean, there's no way to know for sure, but I really, really think it would have. It either would have prevented him from using, but at least it would have prevented things from getting as bad as they did. Because at some point, he was trying to self-medicate for all this pain that he was in. But then once the person starts to do that enough, then their brain changes and they become physically addicted.
You write about AA in the book, and I think it's interesting because you look at AA and say that it is very successful for some people, but one of the problems is that many people see it as the solution to everyone's problems. And in the book, and you have called for a formation of an American addiction society. What do you think such a society could accomplish that would help everyone and the many different, as I said, the enormity, the many facets to this problem?
Well, the reason that AA is sort of the only available treatment for many people, for most people, it's been basically the only one, and it's helped a lot of people. So I'm certainly not criticizing AA. I am criticizing, though, the system and the programs, for instance, that a lot of addicts, a lot of kids end up in, where they say that the only treatment for addiction is 12-step programs. That alienates a lot of people. A lot of people fall out of treatment or refuse to go back to treatment because it just doesn't work for them. And there are many other treatments for addiction, including AA, but also including behavioral treatments, medication, whatever. It sort of stunned me when I realized that this is the number three killer in America. 350 people a day are dying. And yet, because of the shame, because of the stigma, we don't really talk about it in the same way as we talk about other diseases. And, there's an American Heart Association devoted to helping end heart disease and American Cancer Society for cancer. And there's nothing like that for addiction. And yet it's, we need to be organized. We need this problem to be forced on the faces or on the desks, I guess, of our legislators so they can fix the problems like insurance and more money can go to research. We need people to be educated. American Cancer Society is responsible for the fact that there are labels, warning labels on cigarette packages that basically we know that cancer is a disease and we know that it's treatable and we know to look out for early warning signs. But we've had nothing like that for addictions. Thankfully, a man who tragically lost his son basically has now devoted his life to creating an organization. It's going to be called Brian's Wish to End Addiction. And it will do what the American Cancer Society does for cancer. And it's, I just say thank God, it's about time.
Still to come, Joe Donahue continues his conversation with David Sheff with a look at better possible uses for the money that's being spent to fight drug trafficking. That's next on The Health Show.
You can find The Health Show anytime online at healthshow.org. Search the archive and listen to whole programs you might have missed or would like to hear again. Even subscribe to our podcast. That's healthshow.org. You can also follow us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thehealthshow.
You can start your own Health Show archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for Health Show number 1314.
This is The Health Show. I'm Bob Barrett.
And I'm Dr. Nina Sachs. Our guest is David Sheff, an award-winning journalist and author of the new book, Clean, Overcoming Addiction and Ending America's Greatest Tragedy. He's speaking with The Health Show's Joe Donahue about the issue of addiction in the U.S., and Joe continues by mentioning a topic from the book, the money that's currently being spent on the country's war on drugs.
When you think of the money that is spent, and you make this point in the book, and I think, it's easy to throw numbers around and it's easy to say, wave a magic wand and if you change this. But, I mean, you do say, look, if you take that $50 billion a year that we spend on drugs, and we put it to prevention and treatment of addicts, we would have a very different structure and a very different issue.
We would. We would. We have now, you know, we spend, I guess it's over, well over $1 trillion on the war on drugs. And yet, you know, we have more people dying of drug overdoses every day than ever. And, you know, I know from my own experience with my kids, but also with, you know, just from every kid I talk to, basically, that it's easier for them to get, you know, pills or certainly pot than it is to get even a beer. So what we're doing isn't working. So my hope is that we will begin to understand that this is a disease and not a criminal problem and not a moral problem. And once we do that, we kind of know how to go forward. You know, we don't arrest people who are ill. We throw them into treatment. And we want to throw them into treatment early with this disease because this disease is a brain disease and it causes people to function in ways that are, you know, that destroy them and also are incredibly harmful to society. So when we stop sort of this focus and spending, as you say, these billions and billions of dollars every year on this failed campaign to stop drugs from coming into the country or to arrest the dealers, whatever it is, that just hasn't worked. And instead put the money into research. You know, the National Institute on Drug Abuse is an amazing organization that is finding new ways to prevent and treat addiction. But their budget is so tiny compared to the amount of money that is spent on all these other programs that haven't worked. But if we shifted even, you know, 10% of that money, I guess we would be whatever it is, what, we would be quintupling the, if that's the word, the budget for the this organization. And it's just impossible to imagine the advances that could come from that.
I think it is also worth noting that we look at addiction and almost, I think that there's less of a stigma with addiction than there is with mental illness or a mental health problem that would often be the root cause for that addiction.
It's true. And then the problem is, I mean, most people who have serious addictions, the majority, have both. You know, so they're addicted and they also have a mental illness that has not been treated. So imagine the stigma. You know, you feel people who have depression, there's been research that shows that there's less of a stigma now, but there still is a sense that, you know, we are in America, we've got to, you know, if you're depressed, then snap out of it, man. You know, get out of bed and go to work or whatever. And if you're using drugs, you know, just stop. If it's destroying your lives, just stop. Well, you know, these are both illnesses, and people would stop if they could, so they need help. But then you put these two together, and then you've got a person who's using drugs to in some ways combat and treat his mental illness, but the drugs make the mental illness worse, and then the worsening mental illness requires more drugs. And so this cycle, you know, just a downward spiral to the point that people, you know, end up on the streets or dead. What we now know is we used to try to either treat mental illnesses or we used to treat addiction and have a hard time treating either one. But even when we were somewhat successful with one of them, if they both weren't treated, neither really were. You know, somebody maybe would get on an antidepressant and be feeling better for a while, but they're still using other drugs, their depression is not going to go away. It's going to come back. They're going to stop using their medication and only use drugs. If, on the other hand, somebody's treated for their addiction and they're off drugs, but suddenly the overwhelming depression or anxiety or whatever it is takes over, there's a really good chance they're going to go back to using. So we really need to treat both, and we've got a system that doesn't do that very well. It's starting to get better, but it's really slow to change.
Where does your optimism lie?
My optimism lies in the fact that people are starting to understand that, yes, this is a disease. It's not a choice. Many people don't get it yet, but more and more people are. The second is that people know that it is treatable, at least, again, they're starting to understand that. Third, it's getting more treatable because of the research that is going on, even though we need a lot more of it. The fourth thing is this organization you talked about, somebody who's going to organize the country to make sure that this gets the priority that other diseases, you know, there's a lot of attention right now in obesity, Alzheimer's disease, they all need the attention, but so does this one. And I guess the other reason that I'm optimistic now in a way that I hope isn't naive, but I travel around the country all the time and I see and hear and feel that people are just tired of people who are affected by this disease. You know, 100 million people are affected directly, are tired of this being a secret and hiding in the closets in sort of this darkness of anonymity and shame. And that is going to change. People are not going to take it anymore. You know, we talk about in the AIDS crisis what changed the way that we think about AIDS, at least many of us do, most of us do, hopefully, and the way we treat it, was this sort of idea that, you know, there was a campaign that said silence equals death. But silence equals death with addiction, too. And people are tired of being silent. And I feel that that is going to change the way that we look at this disease and the way we are able to treat it in America. And I'm really hopeful about that.
Again, the name of David Sheff's new book is Clean, Overcoming Addiction and Ending America's Greatest Tragedy. He spoke with the Health Show's Joe Donahue.
An online resource from the National Institutes of Health called Seeking Drug Abuse Treatment, Know What to Ask, has been designed to help individuals and families struggling with addiction ask the right questions before picking out a drug treatment program. Wally Akinzo from the NIH has more.
The NIH has developed a new resource that will help people struggling with addiction ask the right questions before choosing drug treatment options.
It's called Seeking Drug Abuse Treatment, Know What to Ask.
Dr. Gaia Dowling is from the NIH.
It's a booklet that describes five basic questions that people who are looking for drug abuse treatment can ask a treatment program to find out if it'd be appropriate for them.
The booklet, also available online, is based on an NIH resource describing the principles of drug addiction treatment from a research-based perspective. Dr. Dowling explains that the booklet covers a variety of themes.
It asks questions like whether the program uses evidence-based treatments, if the program will tailor the treatment to the needs of the patient, if it will adapt the treatment as the patient's needs change. Another important factor is how long treatment lasts. So is the duration of the treatment sufficient for the patient? And then it also asks about how 12-step programs work into treatment, since most people who are looking for treatment may not have heard of a lot of the other programs, but they do know what 12-step is and should know how that is incorporated into the treatment.
According to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, in 2010, an estimated 22.1 million persons aged 12 years or older were classified with substance dependence or abuse in the past year. That's 8.7% of the population aged 12 or older. The goal of drug abuse treatment is to stop drug use and help people return to productive functioning in the family, workplace, and community. However, keeping patients in treatment long enough to achieve that goal can be difficult. Finding the right treatment for an individual's specific needs is critical. This booklet describes available medications and evidence-based behavioral therapies, the need for comprehensive, tailored, and sustained treatment, as well as the reality of relapse and the role of community-level support. To get a copy of the booklet or see the content online, visit drugabuse.gov. This is Wally Akinzo, NIH, turning discovery into health.
That's all the time we have for this week's Health Show. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at healthshow.org. You can explore the archive for any programs you might have missed or would like to hear again. You can also subscribe to our podcast. That's healthshow.org.
Want more? Then follow us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thehealthshow. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is letters@healthshow.org.
I'm Bob Barrett.
And I'm Dr. Nina Sachs.
Stay healthy and be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Health Show.
Dr. Nina Sachs is a practicing member of the American College of Gastroenterology. Bob Barrett is producer of The Health Show. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Health Show is a presentation of National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Thank you.